Welcome to episode 21 of Nui Tech People. Today we've got Jeremy Gupta. Jeremy is one of the stories we're hearing more of, somebody that grew up locally, moved away, gained some experiences, now moved back to Newcastle for a better lifestyle with his young family. Jeremy was previously CTO at Cars Guide in Sydney, comes back to Newcastle with a wealth of experience. Interesting to hear from Jeremy about his experiences, why he's moved back, and what he's hoping to achieve back in Newcastle. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to episode 21 of Nui Tech People. Today we've got Jeremy Gupta. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, James. Pleasure to be here.
Mate, you're new to Newcastle, so most people wouldn't know of you. Can you give the listeners a bit of an overview of who you are, what you've done?
Yeah, absolutely. So not new to Newcastle. I actually grew up here, but I've come back after 18 years. I spent majority of my time in Sydney. So I actually went there for university and then kind of fell into technology. Career's been pretty broad. I spent the majority of my time kind of in strategy and consulting at a services company. Done some pretty cool stuff with Woolworths, with News Corp, enterprise and government. Really kind of rode that wave of mobile and cloud adoption in kind of enterprise. And then the last 3 years I've been the chief technology officer at Cars Guide and Auto Trader, which is a lot of fun as well, in the automotive vertical. The second brand, Auto Trader, we launched from the ground up. Which is not insignificant, lots of peaks and lots of troughs, but a lot of fun as well. So that's kind of been the majority of my career. And I had a stint in New York as well, setting up the technology function of a new office over there, which was a lot of fun pre-kids.
Pre-kids, that's a big difference, mate. You've just touched on that. Let's go straight to Newcastle part. You've done Sydney, you've done New York, back to Newcastle. Now what brings somebody who's a current CTO back to Newcastle?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually family reasons. So our daughter goes to kindergarten next year, and so we kind of had a line in the sand, and we wanted her to go to school in Newcastle. Great place to grow up. But beyond kind of the family reasons, I think I'd seen a lot of stuff around the Newcastle environment and the culture and some of the change that had happened, and I've still got family and friends up here, so we kind of got to see that on the odd weekend and over holidays. So primarily family, but also the opportunity, I think, is still here and is growing. So I'm pretty excited about
it. Okay. Nice. Mate, you've been in Newcastle for about a month now, right? What's your current thoughts on the scene, the tech scene in Newcastle? You've probably got, I've seen you at a few events. I know you've met a lot of people. What's your current thoughts on the state of play?
Yeah, pleasantly surprised, to be honest. I didn't have any kind of preconceptions about the size of the community or, you know, the kinds of things that were going on and the characters here, but big kind of range of skill sets and range of ideas across all verticals. So had some really good conversations, with yourself and some others at events. Lots of entrepreneurs and early stage companies, a lot of bigger companies as well that are trying to be progressive. So really promising, and the stuff that the uni's doing, I think, you know, is really important to the community and really impressive as well. So definitely pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot happening both at that sort of entrepreneurial startup level through to a few scale-ups that are having big success now as well.
Yeah, I think, it's important for those to be visible. I think, we're at an event where Newcastle probably didn't promote itself as well as it could have, but it's pretty clear that there's some strong cohorts coming through and some good thinkers in the community. So, it bodes well for the future.
Yeah, cool. And then from an individual perspective, what's the plans for you getting involved with the community locally? Is it starting your own startup, getting involved, consultancy, where are you at? What are your plans?
Yeah, a few ideas kind of kicking around. I think we need to settle up here and get to know everyone a bit better. I think, I'm definitely keen to contribute to the community. So I've been with the Uni of Newcastle guys and kind of talked about, involvement in that kind of piece. Some advising and mentoring with the stuff that they're doing. I think Newcastle's ripe for software engineering capabilities that can service kind of more metro areas. So before I left Sydney, there's a lot of interest in Sydney-based companies and Melbourne-based companies using a team based out of Newcastle or otherwise, due to talent shortage and, the cost of talent in those metro areas. And then I think, thirdly, you touched on consulting. I think there's a lot of opportunities here to kind of, advise and mentor and build a capability with some of the local companies based on learnings that I've had across Sydney and New York.
Yeah, for sure. That talent shortage is very real. It's very real, not only in capital cities, but in Newcastle, especially from the engineering perspective, right?
Yeah, by the sounds of it. I think you know, what we said about Newcastle promoting itself will help. I don't think it's a short-term game. I think you're looking at a 3 and a 5 year horizon.
Yeah,
you need to get more people into those degrees and, you know, into those cohorts out of school. Yeah. And have an interest in technology. So I think it's the right vision, you know, but it'll take time, no doubt.
Yeah, cool. And you just mentioned on it, so coming into the university side, right, you've done a degree.
Yes.
What was your degree in?
I did a Bachelor of Computer and a Master of Biomedical.
Biomedical.
Engineering, yeah.
Yeah, sweet. Talk to us about that.
So the biomedical engineering sits, the degree sits in a non-framed piece of paper under my bed, and it's never been used. I did that predominantly because I didn't actually know what to do at university. So I come from a medical family and I didn't want to be a doctor, and I kind of fell into, you know, what might be medical-esque, but not really, with dealing with blood and guts and hospitals. So I did that. And then kind of out of university, I kind of fell more into technology and got a graduate role as a software engineer. You know, if I could go back in time, I would have had more of an interest in technology, particularly in school, as opposed to just from university and onwards.
Yeah.
So while the biomedical engineering degree, you know, is bona fide and it hasn't been used, it's predominantly the computer engineering aspect. Yeah.
Nice. So overall, if you had to say that computer engineering degree in particular, how valuable has that been for your learning?
I think it's been valuable, like components of it. I spent 5 years at uni. I don't think that was the right length of time for value. I think it was a lot of fun, but you know, value versus effort are two different things. I think 3 years is probably the max amount of time you'd want to spend in a tertiary institution these days if you're interested in technology and that vertical. A computer science degree for 3 years will teach you the fundamentals. You might get some industry experience and then you're good to go. I think that'll shorten even more. There's lots of shorter time frame education companies like Coder Academy that are doing 6 month cohorts and giving you industry experience and teaching you fundamentals. I think that's too short. I think 3 years is too long. I think, you know, over the next few years, you'll start to see that shorten.
Yeah.
And universities and tertiary educators needing to adapt.
Yeah, and probably becoming a mix, right? A mix thereof, you know, the Coder Academies and the universities, right? So
yeah,
potentially a part thereof where you mix providers together to get that sort of more wholesome opportunity.
Yeah, I think you can teach fundamentals in a classroom, but you actually learn a hell of a lot more on the tools. So universities and tertiary educators need to understand how they can give real world experience to their graduates and kind of send them into the workforce a bit more savvy.
Yeah,
I think soft skills are immensely important. It's not just the fundamentals. You need to know, you know, how to communicate, you need emotional intelligence, you need to know how the business works. That kind of stuff you don't get in a classroom, unfortunately.
No. And it's not easily taught, right? I think it's a learning experience to do that. It's not something you learn by a textbook.
No, absolutely. Like, I learned, you know, all of my kind of soft skills in, you know, the roles I've fulfilled. I certainly wasn't at a university. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting time for universities and, you know, some of them are looking to adapt, the uni.
Yeah.
But Newcastle in particular, it's not going to be a short-term thing, though.
No.
It's a larger horizon, but there's a lot of stuff in the States at the moment around founders and VCs trying to get school students not to go to universities.
Yeah.
Instead, putting them into these programs where they can mentor and support them and give them a grant. So I think, you know, once that starts to catch wind over there, I think you'll start to see some of those concepts introduced.
Yeah, I think Tim Cook was in an article only the other day or an interview within the last week that came out and said a 3 year university degree for engineers, software engineers, not worth it.
Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, there's some fundamentals you can teach in the classroom.
Yeah.
It's important. I think the rest of it you learn kind of in the roles that you occupy and the environment you're thrust in.
I agree. I think if Newcastle sort of invests in that, right, as you said, 3 to 5 years, if you can get more people going in at the start now, even if they've done a year and then try to feed them into some companies with some real world experience, that'll be the thing that'll build our talent pool here. It's not waiting for them to finish a 3 year degree, then get out with a grad role or something like that. It's trying to take advantage of them earlier on.
Yeah, I think exposing them to different ways of thinking and different environments. I think there's a lot of value in students still going and working in Sydney or in Melbourne and areas where engineering and product are a bit more mature, and there are some good thought leaders that you can learn from and, you know, experience different scale environments. But there's no reason Newcastle can't, you know, in 3 to 5 years be a place where people want to come and students that are graduating want to stay in.
Yeah, it's probably getting that more senior people like yourself that have gone and in those more senior roles have people to, I guess, be mentors or, you know, have mentees with it under them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned so much from people that are more experienced than I and who come from different verticals and have different ways of thinking or different core skill sets. And it's only by exposed to that kind of thinking that you can grow as well. So the more that we can introduce into Newcastle, the better. In the meantime, I think we still need to expose people to different locations where that's more mature, but give it time and it can definitely happen.
All right. So if you said on that, then if you were to put an advice piece together, hey, you've got an interest in computers, you've just finished year 12, what's the plan? If you were Newcastle based, how would you advise people to go?
I'd suggest a comp science degree. I think Newcastle has, by all reports, a decent degree. I think that some of the stuff that they're doing with Slingshot and some of the programs they're running, I think seems like it's a great environment. I need to dig a bit deeper into it. I definitely pursue technology. I try and do it with the shortest degree possible. And I would spend a lot of time outside of university, being in the industry, going to meetups, networking, picking up, volunteer jobs with, industry leaders or companies that you might want to kind of work for one day, and just spending some time, being in their environment and trying to soak in as much as you can. So that come the end of 3 years, you're more rounded than what you might be if you just, stay at university and concentrated on books.
Yeah, build a side project or something like that on the side. I think it's also another really good thing. Shows people you've got an interest in it. You can actually go out and turn theory into something working.
Yeah, and you see on a lot of resumes, it's the GitHub projects or the GitLab projects, and all that stuff counts. It shows that you have an interest in it. You can apply yourself out of kind of your paid hours. I think it's really important. So, yeah, definitely. It's a great idea.
Sweet. Finish your degree then. Do you encourage them to stay locally, or do you encourage them to go get international or big city experience?
I think it's contextual to the person and their interests. If they're really keen to learn, they want to be, they want to be exposed to some pretty mature and fast-paced environments, I think. Over the next 2 years, they probably have to still go to Sydney or to Melbourne or, overseas. If they're keen to learn from, some of the more younger startups here or scale-ups, and they want to be in that environment, I think there's no reason for them to leave. I think what's important is that they're open to learning and they're curious, because they're going to get thrust into an environment which is fast-paced and it's very different to the graduate programs of some of the companies that they would have gone into 5 or 10 years ago. Which were really centered around kind of easing them into the industry and providing them, a safe environment, which I don't think is the best environment for a graduate. So I think it's contextual to the person, but over time and definitely kind of over the next few months, it sounds like, there's a cohort that could stay here in Sydney, stay here in Newcastle, and do some great stuff.
I agree, man. I think the other part is that you sort of mentioned over there, the scale-ups and startups, like, joining a scale-up or a startup straight out, cutting your teeth there, is going to give you a great, 9 times out of 10, a greater opportunity to have more vast responsibility, a broader responsibility and deeper responsibility than you might get in a bigger corporate where, hey, you're put in your box and you put through a probably more formalized graduate program, as opposed to startups and scale-ups. Hey, you've got to get in there and you've got to be doing some work, right?
Yeah, and I think the one aspect of it is getting your hands dirty. The second is, as you touched on, like being a generalist, it's good to be a Swiss Army knife. Through kind of doing that, I can do like a brand template, I can do software engineering, I know some stuff about product, I know some stuff about business, I can read a P&L statement, like you only get exposed to that kind of environment in fast growing companies where it's almost acceptable and expected that you broaden your horizons out of your core kind of roles and responsibilities. So I think, if you're curious, they're great environments. If you do want to be safe and you're happy kind of coming in and checking out mentally at the end of the day, then that's all good as well. It's contextual to the person, but there's a lot of value in being a generalist because technology changes so quickly. If you just want to be niche and you want to be an expert in one particular technology, there's no guarantee in 3 or 5 years that there's a demand for that skill set or you're employable.
Obviously recruited a number of people, and I'm sure you have as well, right? That ability to learn or ability to pick up new skills is something I'm always looking for, right? Because as you said, technologies are changing so frequently. If somebody's a specialist in one programming language and that changes, they've become obsolete very quickly. Whereas if somebody's continuing to pick up the newer technologies, work with new technologies, shown an ability to learn, it's a really good asset to have.
Right? Yeah, and it shows they're curious as well. Like, they are open and they're adaptable and they're flexible, and personal life, professional life, that same kind of attitude, you know, will take people very far. Okay. You find people that travel, you know, more open and more curious and more accepting of different ways of working. And a lot of the stuff that people do in their personal life transcends into their professional life. If they're goal-driven, you know, you find out that they're hard workers. You know, if they're open, they love traveling, or, you know, they're artistic, you find it, you know, leads to creativity in the workplace. So I think there's a lot of value in being generalists and being curious.
Nice. I think that's really good advice. Really good advice. Mate, if we wind it back for you, you did your degree. You obviously, you come from that, you know, I guess, a medical family. You didn't want to deal with the blood and guts on a daily basis. Mate, what took you down that technology route?
I actually fell into technology, so it was kind of, you know, last 18 months of my degree where it became clear that there weren't a whole lot of biomedical roles in Sydney at the time. You'd probably have to go overseas, and I didn't really want to go straight overseas. So I kind of applied for software engineering roles, and I actually found a role with a company called NextGen.net, which has got a Newcastle office. So the CEO is I went to school with his brother, and like it was quite odd kind of how it happened, but they were based out of North Sydney. I joined as a software engineer and kind of spent 2 years there and grew with the company, and they were quite small at the time, and they've gone on to greater things since in the mortgage industry. And I kind of got in and understood, you know, what problem solving looks like, and, you know, some of the applications of technology, and I kind of, I guess, fell in love with it. It was B2B though, and that wasn't kind of that appealing to me at the time, and I wanted the shiny stuff, so I kind of moved into services and for a company that was doing a lot of B2C stuff. So for me, that worked out really well, and I got to learn all the things that I wanted to in Sydney. But my advice and, you know, how I fell in, it's very specific to me. You know, I think if I'd planned it better, you know, I could have been in the workforce a lot earlier and, you know, learned a lot more things and kind of, you know, been 2 or 3 years ahead of maybe where I am now. But, you know, my early years in the industry were eye-openers in a good way, the application of technology and power of it. You know, I'm pretty grateful as well that I didn't go into a graduate program as a biomedical engineer. Because, you know, looking back on it, you know, it would have taken me down a very different path.
Yeah, very niche. Definitely not very niche. Yeah, sweet. Where'd we go from there after NextGen.net?
I worked for a company called Heirloom, which was doing some Windows Mobile kind of work for CommBank and kind of Gordon and Gotch and Beiersdorf and a few kind of companies. And I was there for 11 months, but they actually didn't have enough work for me. It was a small team of seven, so I kind of wanted something to sink my teeth into, and I joined Tiger Spark. So they were a team of 12, a Sydney office. I was a software engineer, hire maybe, I don't know, 6 in that office or 5 in that office. And then kind of joined at the right time. They were very dominant in the mobile kind of B2C campaign industry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 2008 was the same time that the iPhone started to pick up, Android came along, the iPad came along. And we're in a really unique position with a good skill set and a good brand to kind of take a lot of organizations and show them the power of mobile, show what mobile first can mean, and then, you know, cloud and the rest of it kind of came on the back of it. So I spent seven months, I think it was, there. Learned a ton. That's through Tiger Spike. I went across to New York, came back, and then, you know, over time we started to get more into enterprise and government and showing them the power of mobility, which is a lot of fun as well. A lot of transformation stuff and a lot of kind of consulting strategy and stakeholder management.
Yeah.
But bigger bang, right? Like you think about the orders of magnitude of improving workforce workflow and, you know, some of the things that, you know, are paper-based in those organizations. So I jumped into Tiger Spike. And then I really wanted to try my hand at product. Kind of being in the services industry, you kind of come in and you come out. It's a bit campaigny in the way that you interact with the product, and it's still the client who runs product. So I looked for a product role, and I got the CTO role at CarsGuide, who were on the verge of being bought by Cox Automotive, which is, you know, $7 billion revenue company globally. And I thought it was too good a chance to pass up, and they were going to bring a new brand down for us to launch. So spent 3 years kind of building up an engineering capability and, you know, getting them to think about customers and new technology and transforming kind of, you know, some of the platforms that we use. And, you know, we got a brand out last year, which is Auto Trader, which was no mean feat. It was kind of like the white whale for that company, launching that brand. And then, 6 months later, I kind of knew we wanted to be up here for our daughter to go to school and to kind of go through your school tours. So that's my journey since leaving university.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty massive. And you're not alone in the family driving that move back to Newcastle. I think that's where Newcastle as a whole is going to get most of its more senior tech talent is people that have gone away, you know, to learn their trade or had some really good life experiences, and then from a family perspective moving back to Newcastle because the lifestyle up here is obviously a massive sell.
Yeah, I mean, lifestyle's second to none. You know, like, we live in Hamilton, it's 5 minutes to the beach, and I ride my bike into town.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing, like, and having family and friends there and the cost of living. I think, you know, it's a bit chicken and egg. You either get, you know, a bunch of senior kind of industry people and then, you know, others follow them, or you get a lot of companies that are doing great things and that actually attracts demand. It feels like there's inklings of both happening. I think a lot of companies, you know, are doing great things.
Yeah.
Comes back to promotion. You know, yeah. I think Newcastle as a city needs to promote a bit more about what they do and what's happening. But I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to live here.
No, I completely agree, man. I think you're right. The top down and the bottom up approach, right? I think we're doing a little bit of both, and I'm not sure which will play as the big ticket winner down the track in 5 years' time, but maybe it'll be a mix of both, or maybe it will be, you know, either a big company coming to Newcastle or one of the smaller companies really growing up and 50-person engineering team here.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. You need both elements there, and one will help the other contribute more. So, you know, we're not far off. It's a great city to live in. You know, we've got family and friends who've lived here continuously. We've got family and friends who've kind of moved to Sydney and come back for family reasons, and, you know, no one's regretted it. So there's no reason not to be here.
Oh, cool. I mean, from a career perspective, you mentioned there before, you went from technical engineer, software, hands-on engineering, you know, writing code day in, day out, to CTO role. I think that's a path that's quite interesting to a lot of tech professionals. They're going through their career. You can either stay, there are people that are uber successful, staying hands-on engineering, and they're just technically wizards. And then there's other people that go down that more managerial route.
Yeah.
Mate, what's your thoughts or advice to start with? Oh, actually, let's go, what's your experience to start with? Like, what took you down that more managerial route? Was that by choice or by you fell into it?
It was by choice and also being given the opportunity, which I don't think maybe a lot of people get. So we kind of had a pecking system, which is kind of software engineer, senior software engineer, tech lead. And I kind of followed that route. And in a services company, the tech lead had a lot of exposure to clients. Would be, you know, quite client-facing, involved in a lot of pre-sales. And so you started to get really good understanding of the business outcomes you were trying to solve with technology.
Yeah.
They were also responsible then with the delivery. So a lot of people management stuff, like getting a cross-functional team to work together, you know, delivering to, you know, whatever the outcome is.
Yeah.
So you kind of got people leadership experience by virtue of that job description.
Mm-hmm.
I got a taste for it there and then, you know, really enjoyed it. I was lucky enough to kind of then assume technical director in the Sydney office, which meant I oversaw the entire engineering org, which was predominantly business and people. Like, it said technical in the title, but, you know, while you input into it, your main responsibility is people, making sure you're building the right capability in people, people understand the context that they're working in, the people understand business, and then you're trying to understand the business as much so that you can get the right people to fit.
Yeah.
It's not so much about the technology at that stage. And then I got a good taste of that, leading a 30-person team and, you know, some of the challenges of that. And, you know, I thought I'd do it again on the product side of it. And the reason I wanted to do product was for the business aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like, understanding how product companies function, what recurring revenue looks like, some of the levers you can pull in marketplaces and things like that. And, you know, that was predominantly business and people as well. But, you know, if you've got a technical background, I think it equips you to make trade-off decisions quite well and to kind of give people enough rope so that you don't have to kind of inspect every decision that they're making and query every kind of suggestion or decision that they made, which I think is really important. So I got a taste for it. You know, I was lucky enough to assume a few roles that allowed me to continue to do that, and really enjoyed it. Having said that, and the other route you can take, which we kind of introduced in my last role, was you don't have to be a tech lead and managing teams and people and so on and so forth. You could, you know, be a principal software engineer. You know, if you enjoy coding, you want to be hands-on, you know, you want to be a thought leader in that space, like, that's fine as well. You know, some people are made for that role and that's what suits them. So we didn't try and pigeonhole everyone into, like, this is your growth curve.
Yeah.
You need to manage people, because that's not right for everyone.
It can be super dangerous, especially in the engineering world, right? Like, some engineers are built for engineering and they have passion around writing code and really high quality, being up to date with the latest technologies, and don't have an interest in the world of managing other people.
Yeah, they see it as a pain or a distraction from kind of hands-on coding, and you need to kind of understand everyone isn't the same, and, you know, you can't cookie cut kind of performance management or, you know, career advice across people. And so, you know, we introduced the concept of, you know, if you want to be hands-on and that's how you want to grow, and you know, that is what engages you, then yeah, the principal software engineering route is probably for you.
Yeah, cool. If people were interested in going down the people management route, what you've done, any advice for people? That's not an easy path, right?
Yeah, I mean, people aren't easy in general. You know, people management is very time consuming, but at the same time, it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
You can build a capability in people, and you can lead people, and you can, you know, articulate the vision and the mission and set them off to run at something at pace by themselves, and you know, you see them achieve what they set out to achieve. It's extremely rewarding. I think you just need to get hands-on. I think you need to find a good network of mentors and support people that you can bounce ideas off. It's very easy to kind of, you know, get insular and angry, or you know, concerned about something that's happened and think it's about you and you know, something you've done or said. But yeah, the more you speak with others in the industry, the more that you understand. Yeah. They have the same experiences and the same challenges. I think patience is key in managing people. A lot of things can happen in heat of the moment or contextual to their personal situation, you know, and you don't always have eyes on what's happening in their personal lives. So, you know, it's a byproduct of just spending time in that role, being patient, you know, seeking advice, and you know, more often than not, if you do that, you'll make the right decisions.
Yeah, and then that you mentioned before, the non-cookie cutter approach, right? Like individuals, they all operate differently. There can't be one approach for everyone, right?
No. We kind of, you know, our kind of recruitment policy and kind of retention policy was based around people have motivations in certain areas. You know, it could be salary,
yeah,
and title. It could be kind of culture and company brand, or it could be like the tools and the projects that they're working on. We kind of thought that you had to get two of those pillars nailed on to keep someone engaged and happy. If they're just after salary and title, then yeah, it's pretty hard to constantly fulfill that motivation. If they just want to work on cool stuff and not do anything else, it's hard as well. And if they're just there because they want to work for a brand, or you know, they like the location of the office, then you're going to struggle as well. So you kind of get two of those three pillars, and you've probably got a recipe for engagement.
Yeah, I completely agree. Man, that's some of the conversation I'm having with companies at the moment and trying to attract people, right? You're trying to understand what the motivators are for people in the market.
Yeah.
What are those motivators, and do you align? Because there's no point trying to sell yourself to somebody that might be there for, you know, 6 months or something like that, because you just can't keep them.
Yeah, and it needs to be both ways, right?
Like, yeah.
Companies need to understand, you know, what they can offer to compete in the market, and
100%.
The candidates need to understand what it is that motivates them, so that they don't churn, you know, in the first year or so.
Yeah, and vice versa as well for them as well. They've got to understand what value they're bringing, right? Like if a client's looking for something in particular, and you've got to understand what value you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for a few years though, you know, Cars Guide didn't have a brand at all that we could talk about in market. You know, it wasn't Google or Atlassian or Canva, and you know, we had to really sell what we were doing, why you join, the vision, the benefits. You know, we kind of said to them, you'd grow more here in 2 years than you would in another company.
Yeah.
And that was because we put them close to the problem being solved, and we gave them autonomy, and we let them, you know, trial new technologies and get their hands dirty.
Yeah.
And that worked.
Yeah.
You know, for the right candidates.
Yeah.
We said, you might get paid less.
Yeah.
You won't have Canva and Google and Atlassian on your resume, but in 2 years' time, your value on the market, if you want to leave, will be more
than it
is when you came in, or if you'd spent 2 years at CBA.
Yeah, and then you'll be able to find the people that have those motivators that are aligned, and then you'll be fine having those people out. But having a clear selling point as a company on what are the objectives, what are the motivators that you can provide people to why come join you, being clear about that is a massive advantage when trying to recruit.
Yeah, and yeah, some companies do it really well.
Yeah.
And have a great employee brand. I think every company needs to have an employee brand going forward. You know, you spoke about talent being a shortage. It definitely is in Sydney. It sounds like it is up here as well.
100%, especially engineering space.
Yeah, so, you know, unless you're clear on what you're going to bring to the table, why you should join, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, or you're going to try to compete on salary, and that's a very expensive, short way of operating.
Yeah.
Like, you can get money, you can get people, and you can get talent competing on salary and salary alone, right? There are people motivated by that. It's just not a good long-term play.
No, for either.
So agreed. Then you've obviously been in the CTO role, pretty big role. You're now in the sort of consultant space as well. How do you get through a day like that? What sort of, do you have any productivity tools or softwares that you use on a daily basis to, you know, get you through the day?
I do. I quite like lists, so short-term lists, long-term lists, which I segment into kind of personal and professional lives. I don't, you know, have any purchase software. I use Apple Notes.
Yeah.
But I find it, you know, particularly useful having a set of things that you want to achieve in a given time period. So I have one for a day and one for a week. And then I have some longer-term things which I kind of bring in, you know, when there's time and availability to do that. I have some pretty big things as well that I probably want to achieve, and I'm a big believer in that you probably overcook what you think you can achieve in 1 year, but you underplay what you can achieve in 3 years.
Yeah.
So, having kind of a horizon of where you want to be and what you want to do and what you want to achieve at a 3 year horizon, I think is hugely beneficial because you'll find you probably can. I don't use anything too fancy in terms of tooling, but I find like short lists that keep you focused, and you can kind of celebrate the wins when you get through that list. Are hugely beneficial for progress.
Yeah, cool. Side note to that, your 3 year project, anything you'd like to achieve personally, professionally, in and around Newcastle specifically, or your career that you'd like to share?
Nothing professionally that's too tangible yet. I'm probably too soon up here to have a clear idea. I've got something with a friend in the healthcare space that we're going to build out as a piece of software to help companies align. I think alignment's something I'm quite passionate about, and setting teams up and organizations to succeed. And my co-founder came up with that idea, so I think that's something we'll evolve over time. I'm really interested in the community here and kind of some of the opportunities to advise and mentor and potentially consult with some of the early stage companies and some of the scale-ups. So nothing too tangible, but I think from everything I can kind of see so far, I think that's a really interesting space.
Yeah.
An area that I could probably add some value to and provide a value exchange for.
Yeah, cool. And you're going about it the right way. Networking's everything, right? Like that's how you don't need to have a rock solid idea right now. Something will come out. You have enough relevant conversations and right thing will come in the forefront.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. It's conversations, right? It's you have enough conversations with people in that space, and then you kind of connect a few dots, and you understand kind of where you want to work with and or work who you want to work with and where you want to work, and something engaging will fall out of that, and whatever happens.
Not every conversation's a good one, and not every conversation's worth your time, but
no.
If you have enough of them, you'll have some good conversations along the way and hopefully bring some value.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in a bit of an envious position. My wife is playing breadwinner for the moment, so I've got patience.
Patience and time, right? Time's a big thing. It's the same when anyone's looking for a new job. Is hey, if you got some time up your sleeve, if you're currently employed, it's a lot easier to find a new job because you don't have to be, you can be a little bit more picky with what you want to do. Whereas if you're unemployed and you're looking for something, you'll take anything.
Mm.
It's probably a lesser chance that that's going to be a long-term opportunity for you.
Yeah, you don't want to be desperate and making decisions based out of desperation. I think, I've been here about a month and, I've had some great conversations. I've got a few more people that, I wouldn't mind speaking to and connecting with. And so, give it a month or two and I think I'll have a better idea.
Great, man, great. Hey, if you continue back to sort of, what's driving you, is there any books or podcasts? Let's start with books. Any books that you've read that you'd really recommend to people that have helped you in your career?
Yeah, I've read a lot of books. I typically do the nonfiction genre and kind of read about business and industry. I think there's some good ones. The Hard Thing About Hard Things is a great book.
Ben Horowitz.
Ben Horowitz, I think that's a fantastic book. How Google Works is a great read.
Yeah.
About the insides of Google and creating high-performance teams. The Lean Startup's probably a bit of a seminal one that everyone should read who's interested in new products and new channels and product development. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People is a great kind of productivity tool. It's an oldie, but a goodie.
Yeah.
So I read that pretty early on in kind of my nonfiction reading days, but a lot of the themes out of that still ring true.
It's so common, right? So many people have read it and so many people keep talking about it. So
that's
proof in the pudding there.
It's quite seminal. So I think there's some great books. Peter Thiel's 0 to 1 is another great book that I recommend. I've got a long list if anyone does want to kind of pick my brain on it, but as standouts, I'd probably pick those kind of 4 or 5.
Nice. Outside of books, podcasts, audiobooks.
Don't do a whole lot of that. I should,
and
I will, I think, as I get more time and some travel time and kind of the ability to do it without kid shows in the background and so on and so forth. But nothing at the moment that I regularly listen to, but I definitely will.
Just another medium, right? It's just education through another medium.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, and I have a lot of friends who do it.
Yeah.
So I will, just don't have any runs on the board yet.
Mate, if you had to wind things back and give yourself some advice early on, come back through, what would you change?
I think, we touched on it earlier, it's being more technology focused and interested in technology. I used to play computer games in high school, but that was about my extent of interaction with it. And then, all through school, I was thinking, medical. Going back, I should have shown a lot more interest in technology, which wasn't easy probably at the time. It wasn't really the done thing, but we've got a 4-year-old who's going to school next year, and we're just trying to get like everything about technology, all the schools. I asked, what do you do with technology? What do you do with science? So, going back through my schooling, I would have paid a lot more attention to technology. I would have tried a lot harder during university. I would have, gone and done stuff with the industry during university to kind of round out my soft skills. And I would have kind of got hands-on and, exposed to some of those environments a lot earlier than what I ended up getting access to.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. The kids that are, starting school, within the next few years, are going to be interesting. Like, they're going to be so well exposed to technology throughout their schooling career. Like, they'll probably come out of year 12, vastly ahead of where most people would be, right? So we'll just continue to change up that game and probably have exposure to things and opportunities with companies or potentially while they're still schooling, right?
Yeah, and I think that's really exciting. I think we don't really know what the effects of that's going to be because it's quite new. It could be bad, it could be good. I assume it's good. There's a lot of backlash about screen time and moderating your kids' use of technology, which I think probably has a basis point, but at the same time, it's the future. So you got to kind of understand how you can allow them to interact with technology and still grow and be educated. Given the workshops that they have for kids in school holidays doing software engineering and mechanical engineering and electrical engineering and seeing them exposed to those ideas at such a young age, you can only imagine that they're going to come out of school very well-rounded and very technically astute.
I agree. You're obviously newer to Newcastle. I dare say there's going to be a few people who want to have a conversation with you. You've got some experiences that people could leverage, right? What's the easiest way for people to get in contact with you?
LinkedIn's always good. So you can hit me up there. I'm pretty active and open to networking. Or you can shoot me an email at jeremy@glisco, glisco.co. And I'll be happy to have a coffee.
Sweet. We'll link those both up in the show notes. So all good.
Fantastic.
Time.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to episode 21 of Newey Tech People. As always, you can find our show notes and all our other episodes on neweytechpeople.com.au. Thanks again for listening.